You're listening to All Marine Radio on the All Warrior Radio Network.
Could you whisper in my ear the things you want to feel? I'll give you anything to feel it coming. Do you wake up on your own? I wonder where you are and live with all your faults. I wanna wake up where you are. I won't say anything at all, so I don't cry.
9 minutes after nine. The show's gonna end a little bit early today, just so you know. And the reason for that is I gotta take Colleen to school. Yeah, I know. It happens. Gotta do that dad thing, so. Joining me on this, my first guest in the fourth year of the program is Alex Hollings. Alex, good morning. How are you?
That's awesome. I'm the first guest in the fourth year of the program. That's really cool, man. I feel honored. I feel as though this is some sort of an award that you've given me.
It is. It might be coincidence, but it could be an award.
So it might be coincidence, but I choose to see it as an award.
Congratulations.
Thank you. It's like being the millionth customer, right?
Exactly. Pish. Confetti, banners, the whole nine yards, except I got none of that.
I'm imagining it, though. You know, radio is very much an imaginative medium because people need to be using their mind's eye to appreciate what we're doing, you know?
Exactly. Starting the fourth year, man. And you know from being in business, sometimes it's dicey whether you're going to get through this year. And so the fact that the fourth year, I hear myself say that, and honestly, it makes me laugh.
Honestly, I think the thing that people don't realize about working in this industry is that starting something like All Marine Radio is very much like starting any small business, you know? Most small businesses fail in their first year. It's really uncommon for a small business to make it 4 years. You know, that's awesome, man. It's a significant accomplishment, because anybody out there, any business owners out there, or anyone who's ever aspired to be, you know how much work goes into starting a business and all the background work that you need to do. You know, the radio show that people listen to is really just the front-facing portion of this, you know, All Marine Radio empire that you've been building, you know, with post-traumatic winning and things like that. There's a lot of legwork that goes on behind the scenes that people don't get to see. I'm savvy to the fact that you've been working 100 hours a week for 4 years now. So congratulations to you for that.
You know? Yeah, I would not recommend it either. It's not. It's too exciting. You know, I mean, come on, who needs that?
You know, it's one of those things. It's just like when people ask me, you know, they're like, oh, you know, I'm thinking about joining the military. Do you think I should join the Marines? For some people, the answer really is, it was the right answer for me, but it might not be for you. You know? Working in this industry is the same thing. For some people, it's the right answer, you know, but it's a short list. It's a short list of people.
Yeah, I didn't even try to talk my sons into it. I told them that, you know what? It's, you know that I love being a Marine, but it's not for everybody. And,
you know, and depending on your goals, it's not, even if your intent is to serve, the Marine Corps might not be the best branch for you to meet your personal goals, you know, which is important. That's not how I made the decision. I literally chose branches. I went into an Armed Forces recruiting center. You know, there was four offices right in there. I could have gone Army, Marines, Air Force, Navy. And the Marine Corps recruiter was the first one that spoke to me, and he told me he didn't want me. And I was like, well, that made my decision right there.
The Army offered me an enlistment bonus. That's the oldest trick in the book, right?
It worked, and it worked, man. The Army was like, we'll give you $20,000. And the Marine Corps was like, we don't need you. Yeah. And I, you know, 21-year-old idiot Alex, I was like, I'll show you, you know, and fast forward.
How many people I hear say that? Get out of here. We don't need you. Come back in a year.
You know, it's the right way to recruit the type of people that the Marine Corps, I think, wants to recruit, you know. People who are going to place service over self, you know.
There's nothing wrong
with joining the Army to get an enlistment bonus. I'm not ragging on you for that. Exactly. But if you're the kind of idiot
maybe a little bit is ragging, but maybe a little bit. But if the people that we want, what you just did was challenge them.
And that's exactly right. He was like, we don't need you. Why do we need you? Yeah. You're 21. You're older than 99% of the people that come in here anyway. You know?
Obviously, I'm not sure what your malfunction is, but you need to go work your, ply your trade someplace else.
You know, and the Marine Corps recruiter didn't get cool with me until I took a, like, cause, you know, I went in on like Wednesday evening and I shipped out on Sunday. So it was a quick track for me. But, he didn't change his tune until I took one of those, like, make-believe ASVAB tests just to see where I'd land. I did really well on that. And he said, what's your MOS? You know, what job do you want? And I was like, I want to leave as soon as possible. And he was like, yeah, what job do you want? And I was like, Marine. One will let me leave as soon as possible. That's the one that I want. And at that point, I became the recruiter's best friend, right? He's like, this guy got a 96 on the ASVAB, and he'll take any job we'll give him? Yeah. Yeah, whatever. Like, so I left on Sunday. You know, I gave my recruiter a real easy week. He filled his quota pretty easy that day.
Being in business for yourself, especially, and Alex is like, he's a battle scarred, survivor of like a landscape dotted by carcasses of internet startup media companies.
I am a veteran of the media wars at this point.
Yeah. They downsize and then go out of business and reinvent themselves. But you have survived it. You're like a cockroach.
Despite myself, I'd say. You know, I had a really, really hectic week this past week. I wasn't able to get back to my computer much for a good couple of days. So I hopped on my computer and I went to the military and defense portion of the Business Insider site, right. Which Business Insider is a great site because it aggregates, news stories from multiple outlets, some of them less reputable than others. So you still need to be critical as you're sifting through, you know, but it's a great place to find news from all over the world. And as I'm scrolling through, like the fourth story on Business Insider was one that I wrote. I had no idea that they were even running my story.
No kidding.
So this is the way the media landscape moves. It moves very quickly. I had three stories published by Business Insider last week that I didn't know about until I got back to my computer. That's how fast the tides can turn.
Why are they running your – what content was it?
So they're partnered with We Are the Mighty, which is a website that I do content for regularly. I probably do, you know, four or five pieces a week for We Are the Mighty that tend to be mostly focused on stuff that, to be honest, the all-Marine radio audience might find kind of generic just because you're already pretty familiar with this stuff. You know, one of the articles that they curated because they have a partnership with We Are the Mighty – was I wrote an article that was just some hiking tips that I've picked up over, you know, 7.5 years in the Marine Corps and then however many years it's been since. You know, three things that most people don't think to do, like add the moleskin to where you're blister prone before you get blisters, you know, or using dry stick deodorant on the crotch, on your crotch to keep from chafing, because chafing's, I just don't have a thigh gap, man. Chafing's a real problem for me once I start racking up the miles. And dry stick deodorant will really save your life in a tough spot, you know?
Right,
things like that that to you guys might seem, you know, old hat, but to the average audience that maybe hasn't done a lot of hiking in their life or maybe never had to do it for a living, you know, it's new and interesting to them. So We Are the Mighty is an awesome place for you to kind of bridge that gap between military and civilian readership. And I've been having a lot of fun writing content for them, but it's different than what I'm used to, man. You know, it's not foreign policy stuff. I'm writing about, you know, hiking tips, stuff like that. But it's a chance for me to branch out and apparently find some new audiences, man. You know, I've got stuff going up on Business Insider. That's great for me professionally.
So We Are the Mighty has a deal that Business Insider can use their content? Yes.
Absolutely. You know, this is something that a lot of websites are turning to. The website that I run, which is loadoutroom.com, right, among them, where because it's tough in this media landscape to produce content and make money, it's easy to produce good content. You know, that's the biggest mistake that people make when they try to get into the internet, media, news, any of these kind of realms where your livelihood is really based on how many people frequent your website. Producing good content, unfortunately, is not enough. You know, there's lots of people out there that are incredible writers.
So why don't you take us kind of behind the scenes of all that? So when we put up a website, are we trying to make it a puppy mill, or are we trying to do quality content that attracts readers?
Now, that is the struggle that I think every website is currently fighting with right now. This is the reason why you saw BuzzFeed going through layoffs recently, right. Why you've seen a lot of smaller news outlets folding or going through huge layoffs recently, is because right now there is a huge dividing line between what the market actually wants and what the audience says that they want, right? And that might be the case in other industries that I'm not as savvy to, but I can tell you that in the media industry, everybody says that what they want is objective journalism. Everybody says that what they want are hard truths, but no one actually wants that, right? So as a news outlet, like for instance, NewsRep, who I'm still affiliated with, I still write for.
Hold on. Let me slow you down. Let me ask you to explain something to us.
Please.
How do these websites get paid? How do they make their money? Where does their
revenue?
That
is an excellent question.
Thank you.
There's lots of ways that they go about it.
Hey, look, I'm in my fourth year here. I know how to do this shit.
Yeah. No, see, that's such a great question because I think so many people who consume news through the internet don't know that, don't know where the money is coming from. And that's so important because anywhere money's involved, there's motive, right?
Hello.
So there's three primary methods that these websites pay their bills, right? The first one is the one that everyone's familiar with, and that's direct advertising. That's right. The banner ads that you see on your websites. Right. Now, banner ads pay in one of two ways. Some people just pay for the real estate of being there. Other people pay by click, right? So if that banner ad is on your favorite website may not actually get any funding. It may not get any revenue from that unless you choose to click on that banner ad, which is the reason why you'll also see organic advertising, which is where while you're reading the content of an article, you'll see that some of the words are links. Sometimes those links are citations. Other times they're links to products, right? That works the same way as a banner ad. The website gets paid, you know, a percentage of a cent per click on each of those links, right? So that's the primary advertising model, right? Then you've got the model that the Washington Post, the New York Times, NewsRep to a certain extent uses, which is a subscription-based model. And the idea there is that the readers pay directly into the news outlet, which allows the news outlet to take some bigger chances when it comes to the coverage that you're pursuing.
They don't have to run, right, what really happened to the Swedish bikini team and what they look like today.
Ah, see, but that's where things get really complicated, because when we say that the subscription model means that the page is no longer beholden to advertisers, that's true. Unfortunately, it means that you're now beholden to subscribers.
Right.
Now, subscribers, we might like to think that the audience is this objective and innocent group of people that just want information, and it's the horrible media that's twisting everything. But the truth is that the media is trying to keep their lights on, and it's the audience that demands crazy shit. Right? So you would think with a subscription model you wouldn't need to cover the Swedish bikini team, but the truth of the matter is that you almost need to cover it more. Because advertisers, they kind of buy into this idea of wanting objective news outlets because it looks good for them as well. But subscribers, the people who are actually giving you their credit card to read your content, they're not going to click on that.
They want the expose on the Swedish bikini team?
Now, don't get me wrong. There are definitely well-informed readers out there that really do want to read 2,000 words on the Belt and Road Initiative. You know, the problem is that
me.
There are just far more.
That would be me.
That would be you.
Yes.
There are far more readers out there that want to just scroll through some pictures of the Swedish bikini team.
You know
from
what?
I do,
but you know the way those things are set up, you have to click 87 times to see 14 pictures.
And now, why do they do that? They do that because every click that you go is a new load on the page, which counts as a new view,
right.
Which if they're selling real estate for advertising,
right.
That counts as new real estate
that
you can sell.
Somebody's getting paid, right?
Somebody's getting paid. Now, they're not making much. Right?
That was a hypothetical, by the way. I don't know how I knew that. That's just a hypothetical.
So now they're not making much per click, and they're not making much per view, right? So a lot of websites do both. They'll do the subscription model with an advertising model. It's kind of like what Hulu does for television. For some reason, I'm paying $10 a month to go to Hulu, but I still have to watch advertisements. That's the same way the New York Times and a lot of these other outlets work. The problem that we run into is that these websites have a huge reach and have huge power, but don't actually have huge earning potential.
Why is that? Because now we're talking money. Because this gets to the crux of the matter. Why is that?
And the problem really comes to...
Because let me tell you, when people see like BuzzFeed laying off people, CNN, right, laying off people rumored to be in financial distress, right, because of their lower ratings, people look at that and go, whoa, what's going on, man? These people are all over TV.
How is it possible? So big.
Right.
Now, there's a number of issues. One of them is that the industry keeps changing really quickly, and this is an industry that historically is not that good at changing that quickly, right? So part of the problem is that people still don't understand how to make money on the Internet. It's the reason why Amazon has operated at a loss for years, despite the fact that it's a multi-billion-dollar business. It's the reason why Facebook is still continuing to try to find ways to wring money out of its massive user base, you know, to the point where the organic reach for marketers on Facebook is next to nothing, because they know that they can blackmail you into just giving you money so that people will see the content that you post for the people that are actually your fans. Because everybody on the Internet is currently struggling to find a way to make money. And when I say struggling, you know, some are legitimately struggling. It's a subjective term. Some are doing very well, but they're still looking for ways to make more. Because the industry is moving so quickly, the target keeps moving, right? Which makes it really hard to hit.
Yes.
You know, and so a combination of the target continuing to move, hashtag trending outrages also has a huge effect on whether or not these news sites are profitable. When something has got everyone furious, traffic is up across the board. Everybody does better when people are angry, you know? And because of that...
So what does that tell us about looking for quality content?
You know, I had a question. Somebody messaged me on LinkedIn the other day, and they were like, you know, I saw that you're not writing hard news as much anymore. You know, I've been following your work for a while. Who do you recommend? What website do you recommend that I go to find military-specific good journalism? And my answer, I mean, I'm still affiliated with NewsRep. I'd certainly recommend going to them. But my answer is that there's no website that you should ever feel as though you can go to and just turn off your skeptical alarms. There is no website out there that you should be able to go to and just trust every word that you read as the gospel, right? Because every writer has their own known and unknown biases. Every editor has their own known and unknown biases. And every outlet has their own known, unknown, and economic biases, right? So Reuters, for instance, is an excellent outlet, but that doesn't mean every story on Reuters is worthwhile.
Right.
You know, I would argue Business Insider is a great place where you can go find great content. You can also find garbage content. You know, every one of these websites is trying to keep their lights on. Every one of these websites has got some number of employees that they're keeping payroll and benefits and all that stuff afloat for. And God's honest truth, the things that drive the most traffic tend to be the things that all of us want to say we don't like. We want to say that we're sick of the Kardashians. We want to say that we're tired of these news outlets covering F-35s drawing penises in the sky with their contrails. That's not real news. Let's talk about something important. The fact of the matter is, though, when you look at the traffic, those fake news stories are the things that everybody clicks on. So when you're saying, you know, to your question before, do you want to be a puppy mill? Nobody, no one in this industry, in my opinion, gets into this business to become a puppy mill. Companies become puppy mills over time because they make these small allowances to try to gain readership, to try to make sure they keep their lights on, so that they could do the hard-hitting journalism that I think most people go to journalism school to do, you know? But you've got to pay the bills, and God's honest truth, and a lot of times it's puppy mill news that pays the bills, you know?
So you got to do both. So the answer is, right, in a world in which clickbait, right, is both loved and hated, clickbait is a requirement to sustain financially viable.
I would say absolutely, unless you want to get real deep into a niche. You know, there's some outlets like...
But you got to have, in order to get into a niche, you got to have deep pockets.
Absolutely.
To survive the lack of, when you started, to survive the lack of traffic, you got to have deep pockets and somebody believing in what you do and then be able to slow it growly.
Much like racing, the only way to make a small fortune in the media is to start with a big one.
Slow it growly? That would mean grow it slowly, I think.
Aviation Week is a great example of a niche publication that does excellent hard-hitting journalism. But your average Joe can't read them because it's something crazy like $250 a year to subscribe. So they become a primary source for a lot of journalists like me, where I know Aviation Week has got guys on the ground and air bases all over the world because every reader is paying $250 a year to be able to fund their endeavor. And they've got fairly little overhead. So Aviation Week is one of those outlets where if you can afford to subscribe, you can get some great news from them. I cite their work fairly often in the technical pieces that I do. But your average reader, A, isn't aware of Aviation Week because it's behind a paywall, and B, isn't going to pay $250 just to learn news about, you know, Boeing. So you end up creating almost like a hierarchy. You can make a living. Aviation Week is never going to be a huge outlet because there's that barrier for entry, right? But they can make a good living and do great work within their niche, you know? Yeah. So if you want to approach a mainstream audience, you've got to provide mainstream content. If you want to be in a niche, when you say
mainstream content, what does that mean?
Mainstream content is to a certain extent clickbait. And and I don't just mean bad content, but I mean if you've got good content, the way that you package it matters so much more than how well worded, how good writing, how well researched the piece is. People click on articles because of the title and the picture, right? You might not know that the article itself was written by the modern Ernest Hemingway until you get in there and you're four paragraphs in. And God's honest truth, no one really cares if you're the modern Ernest Hemingway because people clicked on the story because they're interested in the content, not necessarily the delivery.
So who makes more money, the writer or the headline writer? The editor.
Well,
who writes the headline? The editor? Now?
Well, the writer writes the headline, but the writer is not responsible for the headline. How does that sound?
I know
that's complicated.
It means that somebody can change it.
Absolutely. You always submit a piece with a headline. But that does not mean that the headline that you submitted will be accompanying your article when it goes to publish, right? Depending on the outlet, your piece is going to go through a minimum of 2, often 4-plus editors before it sees publication. Wow. Not every one of them is checking your spelling and grammar. Usually that's the responsibility of the copy editor. Then you'll have like a content editor who their primary role is to make sure that the stuff that you're writing isn't off the wall, the sources that you're citing are legitimate, and the content that you've submitted is in keeping with the tone of the website. You know, Popular Mechanics, for instance, We Are the Mighty, another outlet that I write for, they tend to avoid politics. So if I submit an article that goes hard and heavy on Donald Trump, they're going to say, this isn't what we're after. You know, they're going to send it back to me. Then you're going to have kind of a polishing editor in some of these outlets. And what their job is to make sure that the article is optimized for SEO, search engine optimization.
Whoa, now we're getting deep into it. When somebody bombs out SEO, now we're talking
about,
this is real shit now.
So the SEO editor's job is to make sure that what you're publishing is packaged well to get a lot of people's attention, right? They might change the feature photo. They might add photos inside the piece. They may well change the headline. They may even change what the article seems like it's talking about in the headline sometimes, just to try to leverage, you know, trending topics that are going on in social media right now, what they intend and anticipate to be trending the next day if it's going to be publishing then. And then finally, the editor-in-chief in all outlets is ultimately responsible for whatever publishes. In a lot of outlets, the editor-in-chief doesn't actually look at the piece before it publishes if they trust the editors that they've delegated that authority to. On the loadout room, I read every article that goes up just because, you know, we only publish 4 pieces of content a day. I can absolutely read everything my guys submit. I'm sure the New York Times editor-in-chief does not read every piece of content that goes through his outlet.
They should.
You know?
They should emulate you. Here's a memo. I know you New York Times assholes listen. Okay, memo to you, right, now that I'm in my 4th year and I'm legit now. Copy Hollings, all right? Read your shit, all right? Because when somebody asks you about it and you say, what? That's the wrong answer, man.
And, you know, and no editor-in-chief can. Jack Murphy, he's the editor-in-chief over at NewsRep, and he's a good friend of mine. Jack is the guy, the reason why I know anything about this business is usually something he taught me. But Jack's a great example. A few years ago, the managing editor at NewsRep, it was SopRep at the time, decided to run a video that ended up having a huge backlash in the special operations community, especially. But it was the video of the Green Berets being killed in Niger when they were attacked. And the reason why the managing editor chose to run it with an accompanying write-up was because he said this was a leadership failure at the top that these men died for, and it's important that we see that, and this is what happens. The story ended up being very controversial, right? A lot of people were really angry about it going up. Ultimately, it was the managing editor that had decided to publish it, and he informed Jack about it, as he did. You know, it's breaking news. Jack still ended up having to be the face of that decision. When people got really angry about it, it was ultimately Jack Murphy's responsibility, and he accepted that. Even though in the moment, it was someone else's decision, and he was notified. You know, it was somebody's command decision, and they let Jack know right away. Ultimately, Jack's the CO. He's got to own it, you know?
He's the CO. So if he's the CO, how is he getting informed about it when somebody else decides to run it? He's the yes or no guy if he's the CO.
Well, he's the yes or no guy, but the same way when you're an infantry platoon commander, you need to make decisions in the moment. But ultimately, your entire command is going to be held
accountable. He's not the CO, though. The CO is like, yeah, we ain't doing that or we are doing that. So somebody else.
The colonel is not making the field decisions. The colonel's held responsible for the field decisions. But running day-to-day operations, you can't expect an editor-in-chief to make every decision about every story.
That's a big one, to run that kind of videotape. If I got informed of that, your shit would be looking for work, bro.
Now, see, I'm going to defend the managing editor on this one a bit because I disagree. And for the same reason why I took issue with the outrage. The day before that video was released, we published another video that showed four Russian special operations operatives being beheaded with a knife. Right? Mm-hmm. Now, that video continues to be one of our highest traffic articles to this day. This year, it is one of our highest trafficked articles. And it's literally just a short write-up, and then this video was released by ISIS showing Russians being decapitated. I had a problem with that video. Nobody else did. We had a problem with it because we didn't like that it was good guys dying. It had nothing to do with whether or not people were being killed. You didn't see any real blood.
No, you know, I'm with you. I'm with you on this. If that's what we're going to traffic in, if that's what you're telling me, then to me, I would just as soon I'll downsize my operations. I will find a different way to do it. But I'm not, if that's what it takes for me to do it like this, I don't want my name associated with that shit.
Well, and that's your decision to make, man. But I mean, ultimately, at the time, you know, SoftRep was publishing 20 pieces of content a day from 60 plus, you know, contributors. That's the job. The job is making hard decisions in real time. And sometimes the decision you made might not be the one that you look back on and think was a good decision. That's the job. That's why we're here. You know, not every day is a victory. And, you know, and sometimes.
But I would tell you this. Not every decision is the same. And like, so the managing editor, I got it. But if my managing editor doesn't come to me and say, hey, I need to go over these decisions with you and I need to make sure you're good with them because these break squelch, right?
That's true. And to your point, SOP within the business changed after that to make sure that the ME did have to brief the editor in chief and a public affairs guy. Whenever something seemingly controversial popped up,
yeah, this is going to break squelch. It can define us, Alex.
I have a real problem with your perspective on this personally. This idea that 6 months after the fact we can tear a guy apart for a decision he made in the split second.
Oh no, I would have done it at the time.
You know, for making a call, if I don't agree with this call.
I do. Because let me just tell you this. I teach decision making, right? I originated one of the first classes in the Marine Corps about decision making, right?
But what you're doing right now is the worst part of decision making, which is 6 months later, armchair quarterbacking.
No. We can discuss it.
That doesn't offend anybody.
We can discuss it when you're fucked up. Oh, all of a sudden you make a decision and now we can't talk about it? No, I have this to say about that. This whole idea of initiative in isolation is bullshit, just like it is on the battlefield, right? If you think that you're going to run and go that way when everybody thinks you're going that way and people are dropping bombs, you're fucking crazy, right? So it's a more mature understanding, and the concept you evolve to is coordinated initiative.
What you said sounds great in the textbook, but it doesn't sound
in
real life.
No, it does. You get
because
fucking
the
real life
dead. Outcomes dictate.
No, yeah, I know. And you get fucking success. You get fucking dead when you do something on your own and nobody else knows about it.
Unless you succeed, in which case often you'll get a Medal of Honor. Dakota Meyer got a Medal of Honor
for directly contradicting
direct orders.
Trust me. Those guys don't win those awards over things that are planned. They win those awards when shit is fucking
when you make
falling
a decision
apart.
In the moment that contradicts.
No, it's not. He had no other choice other than to just walk away from it. He had two choices: to go and help or to walk away. That's not
and
what we're talking
right
about. That's not what we're talking about. You using Dakota Myers as a defense for the managing editor is apples and oranges. The managing editor.
Why is it apples and oranges?
Because
it's apples and oranges because of the outcome.
No. It's apples and oranges because Dakota Myers is in a stimuli response situation. There is
and
the
you're
quick,
saying that a
and there's
a editor in a newsroom
the manager
is not?
In a newsroom that sees that story, that understands the implications of that and fails to coordinate that with whoever the CO is, right? He's stupid.
I think the failure there was understanding the implications.
Then that's a failure. That's a total failure.
That's the reason why you have an after action report.
We'll do better next time because I was too stupid to figure out that by publishing this, I might fuck up our image forever. I might brand us forever. Now, I don't even know the guy, and I'm not bad-mouthing him. I'm just using his as an example. So to me, if you got somebody in that position that doesn't realize when
something breaks, what is your solution then? What's your solution after the fact when someone makes this sort of mistake?
Well, you have to make a determination whether it's a genetic defect or whether it's a teachable moment and he just didn't see it. Now, I would argue if he doesn't know the implications of that, he should go away.
Now, here's my example that I would use in a combat environment. In Jack Murphy's book that came out recently, his memoir, Murphy's Law, which is a great book, Jack talks about how as an Army Ranger, his first ever engagement in combat was actually a friendly fire incident. Right.
Okay.
Now, he was set up because they thought that they were going to ambush, you know, a Taliban element that was supposed to be coming because of a miscommunication. It was an American element that came. They ended up in an engagement with one another. Jack was the only person that actually shot anybody. It was another American soldier. And when that happened, Jack realized something seemed off about this and walked down there to put himself in harm's way to find out what was really going on. Jack could very much at that point have been fired. You know, Jack Murphy went on to be a very successful Army Ranger, a successful Green Beret weapons sergeant. But at that point, he made a bad decision as the leader of his element that put another American soldier in harm's way, and he had every right to be fired. That was a teachable moment, right? That was a terrible failure on Jack's part. The entire trajectory of Jack's life could have changed completely because in the moment, he made a decision. We should not ruin a person's life over an in-the-moment decision, even when it's that egregious a decision. What we need to do is determine whether or not things can improve from here. Instead of us looking for someone to light torches and carry pitchforks towards,
there's consequences when you do things and people get killed.
Absolutely. You know, just like there's consequences in the media.
Just because we like Jack, right, doesn't
Here's
mean
my question to you that, about that,
that, that if his is if his error, right? Right, and there's a whole investigation, and I don't have enough data points based on what you told me to decide that. But in the investigation,
Jack wasn't really at fault, but he did.
Okay, so to me, that's what's critical. In the investigation, if he's culpable, and he should have known it, and somebody got fucked up, then he has to pay. And you have to do that because the solution isn't, oh, well, he made a mistake, but he's a good guy, and we'll try harder next time.
But the solution
that's not the solution.
To hang your problem.
No, I agree with you. No, you got to do the investigation, and you've got to look into it, and you've got to do the right thing.
I guess my question is that I'm not sure what you're riled up about. I don't know what outcome you wanted that didn't happen.
Well, to me, what I'm riled up about is that the CEO doesn't know and gets blindsided. And because of the op tempo, the managing editor says, yeah, I just launched that.
You're right.
And
SOP was shifted to make sure that didn't happen.
Oh, but so I am right.
Well, I said you were right about that in the first place, but I don't agree with this. You have the same mentality as so many others that what we need to do is hang the media when we don't like the news.
No.
And I can't get on board with it, man.
No.
I don't agree with the decision that that guy might have made, but I'm not going to hang the media. I'm not going to hang a journalist or an editor over a decision that they made in the heat of the moment because they thought
one. I don't consider them humans, so I wouldn't hang them, okay?
But this is the problem. You're one of us.
No, I'm not.
You are.
No,
you
I'm
run
not.
A radio
no,
show.
No, no I'm not.
You talk to me every other week, which
I'm
makes
not.
At least you one of me.
No, I'm not one of you. Trust me. I know
what
me.
Is it, what is
I know
that
me,
you think this differentiates
and I'm not
you from
one
the
of
media?
You. What's that?
What is it that you believe? Because everyone you talk to in the media is happy to shit on the media.
Right.
Because they all act like the media is some other that they're not a part of.
Well,
what
if,
is it that you think differentiates you from the media?
Well, what differentiates a salesman, right?
Like, would you consider me the media? Am I a part of the media?
I think you are an honorable part of the media.
But
okay?
But you still see the media as like a singular entity that's got motive.
No, I don't. To me, right, what you sell is important. If you sell opium, right? If you sell arms, if you sell terrorism. You could tell me, well, they're all salesmen. What's wrong with being a salesman and making a living? Well, what's wrong is what you sell. So if what you sell as a journalist is shit, then you're shit, in my opinion.
Now, that's fair, but the problem is that because everybody thinks that all the media sells is shit.
No. Well,
this is the reason why
on.
We're so happy to
come
hang
on.
An editor for a bad decision.
Only the stupid among us would say something like that.
How many among us are the stupid, Mac?
Well, I'm not saying that's not an insignificant number.
The reason why I get defensive about this, and I should tell you why I'm defensive about this.
You are.
It's because every day, every one of us that works with me gets inundated with messages and tweets and emails about how I am some kind of a fascist or a cuck. I'm ruining the country because I'm so liberal, or I'm ruining the country because I'm so conservative. I am a part of this overwhelming media conspiracy to ruin the world for Donald Trump or to ruin the world with Donald Trump.
You have to live.
I'm a piece of shit because I'm a journalist. I don't think that that's how we get good journalism.
You should get over it, okay? Look, I have a shit meter, okay? I know shit when I read shit. And you don't write shit.
I appreciate that. I really do. But you have to bear in mind that a lot of people tend to think that it's shit just because they don't like it.
It's
not news.
Let me give you the short answer to them. Fuck them. Right?
How we pay our bills, man. This is what we're talking about.
I know,
this is
why
I don't say fuck anybody. Because
I do.
I need everybody.
I know.
On my work.
Then you need to refine your job. And you need to get to a place where you can pursue what you believe is the truth. You can stand behind that, and if people don't like it, and they have through articulate discourse, would like to talk to you about it, then
you
that's
live
fine.
In a fantasy world, man. I love you, but you live in a fantasy land.
I know.
I do articulate discourse with a journalist on Twitter.
You don't. That's why I'm not a journalist. I run a boutique. Okay.
You run a radio program with a significant reach that talks about foreign policy and hard-hitting topics and offers your unique position on them as informed through your experiences as a Marine officer and as a very well-educated and professional man. I would call that the media.
Well,
the only difference between you and a guy on Fox News is that Fox News is Fox News and you're all Marine Radio. It's the name.
That's all you think's the difference? Come on.
I mean, the name and the reach that they can buy. Yeah. I mean, if some large outlet came and said, Mac, we love your show. We want to run your show on our radio, you know, on Clear Channel. We want to run it on 60 FM radio stations all across the country.
Right.
You're still you. You didn't change but, just because but here's you worked what for would some happen. Big corporation.
Here's what would here's what would happen. So, and I've had this discussion before. So, who has a say in what I do? Well, nobody, but Ed would work with you. What the fuck does that mean, Ed would work with me? This happened with Ed Schultz, the late, great Ed Schultz. He wanted me to do my show for on his network. So what does that mean? He's a Democrat now. I looked across at the owner of the radio stations, the network, and Ed, and we're having dinner, and I said, nobody's going to call me and tell me what to do on my show. My show belongs to me, okay? And so if that's going to be a stopping point, then we need to get that on the table, finish our dinner, and I'll go home.
I agree with you completely, yeah.
So, but again, you have to commit to being poor to say that.
Now, I had a very similar conversation when I was hired at SoftRap at the time. But I asked them, I was like, you know, nobody's asked me about my political affiliation. You know, I'm on my fourth interview where they're offering me the job.
Right.
And they said to me unequivocally, they're like, that's because it doesn't, what does that have to do with the job? That shouldn't play a role in what you do for a living. And I was like, I agree completely. I'm happy to hear you say that. I assume SoftRep was a conservative leaning outlet, you know, just because it's a military related outlet. So I assumed that maybe they'd be like, well, you know, we kind of play with kids' gloves on this. And because Brandon supports this politician, we're going to, you know, whatever. But no, they were like, what do your political affiliations have to do with your ability to objectively cover the news? I don't care who you vote for as long as you do your job. And I really, really liked that.
Right.
You don't. The thing is, though, is that even if you work for CNN or Fox News, they're not going to come to you and say, hey, you know, we write good things about Donald Trump around here. it's never going to be that. It's always going to be nuanced, right?
But it's kind of like you understood in English grammar.
Yes.
What does that mean?
But to be honest with you, most of the bias doesn't come that way. Most of the bias actually comes from the reader traffic stats. You know, when you write an article, let's say you write an article for what is seen
explain, as, okay, hold on. Explain reader traffic stats.
Well, here's a great example. You know, during the 2016 presidential election.
Hold on. Yep. Colleen! Come here. Wait.
I've never spoken to Colleen before. I'm nervous.
I have to take my daughter to school. Come here! Come here. Say hi to everybody.
Hi.
Hi, Colleen.
Let's say hi, Alex.
Hi, Alex.
I've heard your voice a million times introducing the show, but I've never met you. It's a pleasure.
Did you have fun at your prom?
Yeah.
All right. How soon, when do we go to school?
I have to be there at 10:15.
So we can leave in 10 minutes?
Yeah.
All right. All right. That's done. There you go, Colleen McNamara. Went to a prom. Get out of here. Shut the door.
I feel like I just met a celebrity in Paris.
Yeah, you didn't meet her. She's not a celebrity. Take the dogs. Never mind.
Her voice is famous.
Oh, I know. She's all famous. Anyway, okay, now, where were we?
Traffic stats. So basically, the way that you get paid for any article is based on people visiting your article. But other things that you take into account are how long someone spends on your article,
yeah,
and whether or not they click on another link within your site or they leave your site after that article. Those metrics will tell you, A, if your headline and photo were engaging enough to draw a reader in, B, if your content was engaging enough to keep them there and for how long, and C, if the product that you were producing seemed good enough that they would want to get more from you, right? So when you gauge those metrics, what you're trying to determine is, number one, how can we make more content that'll draw more people in? But number two, sometimes the content that draws people isn't the same content that keeps people. And that's often a good way of determining whether or not the content itself, the writer, was doing a good job, right?
Right.
The writer isn't necessarily responsible for how many people click on a story, but the writer is responsible for how long they stay there and often whether or not they'll go to another story from it, right? So when you're trying to keep track of all those stats, what you find is that it tends to be the fluff that draws the most attention, you know? Outrage and inconsequential but fun to look at are the two best ways to get a lot of people to look at something that you put together. Inconsequential but fun to look at, those are the categories where you're going to have, you know, a bunch of half-naked women in your article, or a bunch of really cool explosions or a YouTube video of a neat car blowing up, something like that, where this isn't going to affect your day, except you're going to go, huh, cool. Those stories do very, very well. Right. The only stories that do better than that tend to be the ones where it's like, boy, are you going to be pissed off when you click on this. If you can have a headline that says something like that, you're going to have a great day. The problem is that professionally, I mean, you're not, in my opinion, you're not doing your job then.
Well, right? And that is the great conundrum for journalists these days. A, you have to pay your bills. And so you.
Yeah, because it's not really an editor coming and telling you, hey, I want more YouTube videos.
No, it's your wife.
Yeah, exactly. You know, it's you looking at, okay, so my buddy who did a story this week about, you know, the 6 bikinis Lindsay Lohan wore over the summer, you know, his story got 1.2 million views. That story I spent 3 weeks researching about, you know, Iran's nuclear programs got 150,000. I don't know how many more Iran nuclear program stories I could write before somebody starts asking me to get my traffic up. So then you end up doing kind of like what movie stars do, one for you, one for me, where it's like, okay, so this week, you know, today I'm going to write a story about
there's a
these are the coolest guns,
right.
And because it'll get some clicks. But tomorrow I'm going to go back to some hard policy stuff that I hope people click on and I hope people read. But hope is really kind of the best you can do, unfortunately.
Right. But so the bottom line in all this, there is a balance that any multimedia company that is in business now, except All Marine Radio, that doesn't really give a shit. No, you want to know what? Honestly?
No, I would argue that you do make the balance. You just do it so well that you're not realizing it. No, you know, you bring in great guests. You talk about.
But here's my balance. Here's my balance. The things that people over the course of 3 years, all right, the battlefield studies that I've done with veterans, with maps, and them talking about specifics about what they've done, those actions, people love, all right? The post-traumatic winning stuff that I've done, people love that. And those
that's great because not only do they love it, but it's important.
Right.
You know what I mean?
Right.
I love that.
No, it's all substance. And most recently, I've begun doing a series called On Discipline, that talks about this notion of discipline in a modern force. How do we do it? The Marine Corps in and out of wars over decades, with guys that have seen it go in and out of wars out of decades, has been crazy. So I'm really lucky in that I've been able to invent a boutique that can be supportive of what I do professionally.
You know, an example that I would use of how you've done a great job of maintaining that balance was when you were covering, you know, the Fitzgerald collision.
Right.
And, you know, as the reports were breaking, you were discussing it, you know, on a day-to-day basis on air. That's a perfect example of tailoring your content to your audience in a pertinent way, right?
Yeah.
And that's what we all need to be striving to do. So the broader your audience base, the stranger, I guess, you need to tailor your content. Or to a certain extent, maybe the more vanilla your content has to become to be tailored to as broad a base as possible.
Right.
But ultimately, it's the same practice of you're trying to talk about things that matter to the people that are in your audience or your readership. And that's what we're supposed to be doing. That's good, right? It gets dangerous when people start tailoring the content only for the audience rather than also to inform. Right.
Yeah. See, to me, that's what I can't. And again, if it means that because the guys I competed against, talk radio has publications that rate talk radio hosts and things like that. And there was this thing called like the Heavy 100 in a publication called Talkers Magazine. I don't even know if it exists anymore.
That's a great example of a niche publication.
Right. It's right? A big deal in your industry. Right. Well, the guys who make the most money, the guys who, what do? They don't worry about the truth. They are white, hot, blowtorches for, you know, what is the difference between Joseph Goebbels and one of these talking heads that has no regard for the truth?
Well, the only way to get your name remembered
right.
is to either outrage or enthrall someone, right? So, for, you know, me with my puny, you know, 2,500 fans on Facebook or whatever I've got, you know, I like to think that every one of those fans was hard earned because I've always been trying to offer a pragmatic approach to the chaos of the world, right?
Right.
But if you're willing to pick a team, That's the difference between 2,500 fans and 25,000, you know? Because if you're willing to pick a team, the people who hate you are going to share your content to talk about how stupid you are, and the people who love you are going to share your content to talk about how right you are so that they can use it to support their own arguments, because all anybody really wants to do is fight, right? So when you're the guy that says, hey, you guys that are fighting, you should really chill out, the truth of the matter is this, you get a lot less traction than when you pick a team and offer some great talking points for that team. Because that team is going to they're going to carry you up into the upper echelons of success. The problem is, in my opinion, is that you're doing a disservice to our nation at that point. And, you know, why did I join the Marine Corps? Was to serve my country. Why did I start contracting with government contractors after? To serve my country. And I like to think that I'm still serving my country in some way.
But again, you're like me, though, Alex. So in pursuit of the truth, in pursuit of bullshit, to be the shrillest, loudest, highest paid doesn't resonate with you.
Agreed.
And that's why you're a guest here.
You know, and that's why I like being here. But I will say, I really do, and I want to be as clear about this as possible. The reason why I get defensive about the guys in the media are because these guys that we dehumanize and we say, you know, they're a part of the media machine that's ruining the country. That's a dude who's making 35 grand a year and has two kids.
Right.
You know,
right.
The guy who wrote that article.
I understand. There's a good reason he's ruining the country.
Yeah. Well, what it is that to him, he's just taking a bite out of his day.
Right.
Well, overall, you're right. These are all small snippets of a much broader issue. But I don't think that it's fair that instead of beating up on CNN, we're beating up on that guy who writes for CNN. Instead of beating up on Fox News, we're beating up on that guy who writes for Fox News.
I say beat up on all of them.
Now, some of these guys, Sean Hannity is wealthy enough that I say feel free to beat up on him. But when it's some no-name reporter, you know what I mean, for the Washington Beacon, and we're gonna make his story a trending hashtag because we don't like the way he characterized one statement from one, you know, U.S. congressman that happens to be very popular. We're going to ruin this guy's entire career because of a sentence that we didn't like how he wrote it. I have a lot of problems with this because it's just redirecting our outrage elsewhere.
You might want to see a therapist about that.
When you know enough of these guys who lose their jobs over nonsense politics that are...
It's an issue for you. You got to work
on
them. You got to work on it, son.
Because to the...
Okay, I got my own real world problems.
They're my coworkers.
I got to take my daughter to school. Okay, so tell everybody where they find your professional work.
You can find my professional work. That's obviously, you know, ethically sound. You can find it all on theloadoutroom.com. Excuse me, loadoutroom.com. You can also find my work on Popular Mechanics. We Are the Mighty. News Rep. You can check out alexhollings.com if you want to just get it all in one place, or find me on social media, facebook.com/alexhollingswriter or Twitter at alexhollings52.
There you have it. He's big and he's sensitive and he's all over the world. So, first of all, on the first program,
somebody's got to speak for the plight of these people, Mac. The guys in the media industry, like this Michael McNamara character, I know.
Exactly. Have a great day. I got to go.
Hey, have a good one, man. I'll talk to you later.
There you go, Alex Hollick. That'll do it. Thanks for listening here on a Monday. If you're just tuning in, don't touch that dial. We started our fourth year today. Yeah, pretty cool. So I got to take Colleen to school on a Monday, first program, year four, with a huge thank you to Bob Nielsen, All Marine Radio, over and out.